Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Today on ESPN Daily, the death of George Floyd at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer has spurred grief and anger across the sports world. But Monty Jones and Mina Kimes break down a week in sports that felt historic despite the lack of actual games being played. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Major League Baseball, you know, every day that goes by, and we continue to not have a solution. We continue to have sides seemingly further and further apart. Chris, unfortunately, because I have never wanted you to be wrong more than this time, you know, I don't know. It doesn't feel great now, and I guess the owners are willing to pay for 48 games prorated, and we'd accept it if that's what it was, but it seems ridiculous to think about coming back for 48 games of baseball.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's worth the risk when you factor in all the logistics and all the things that the players are going to have to do, not to mention them putting themselves in harm's way and knowing that that could potentially impact what happens to impending free agents in the coming spring. So it doesn't feel like the juice would be worth the squeeze if it's just a 48-game season and then going into the postseason. I get where the owners are coming from. They recognize that there are going to be some losses, but Jeff Passan had a beautiful breakdown of that on the .com, and he said the losses would ultimately amount to a little over $10 million per team. And that's what we're fighting about. That's where the impasse is. And so to me, that seems trivial, especially, you know, when you put that in the context of what the country is going through and almost 40 million Americans not having jobs today.
What would seemingly make sense, and we've talked about this, we talked about it with Buster Olney the other day and Jesse Rogers, Rick, is deferring some payments. Where if you're going to lose money, well, push it to the future where you're actually, you know, on the positive side and making money. No? Doesn't that make sense?
It makes sense, and it's easy to say. I think the fundamental problem between these two sides is the lack of trust. Because, I mean, Jeff Passan's article is a great article. But again, I mean, it keeps pointing to the fact that, you know, what the owners say isn't necessarily what Tony Clark and the union believe. And how does it work too? I mean, how does it work now if all of a sudden, you know, Houston and the Texas Rangers can have people in seats? How does that affect the revenue coming in? Where does that money go? Does that go to, you know, to the, did they, you take that money and put it into the pot? And that's what we're splitting up. Like what, I don't think the union trusts what they're being told. And more importantly, this is, you know, both sides gearing up for CBA negotiations that are right around the corner. And neither side wants to show any weakness, which kind of results in what you've seen right now.
Do you think that if the CBA negotiations were a few years down the road, that something would have been done by now?
Yes. I do.
I do too. And because that's the backdrop of all of this, Rick, that's why I'm pessimistic about baseball returning this summer. I just think that both sides are in a position where neither one wants to give. And in the last CBA negotiations, the Players Association didn't think that it went as well as CBA negotiations had went for them in the past. And so they're trying to take back a little bit of ground, and the owners are trying to get more ground. And so usually when you get into those types of situations, it's ultimately the person that can hold out the longest that's probably going to win. But with Baseball Players Association, I'm not willing to say that just because I know what happened in 94. They sacrificed a postseason to make sure that they had the most favorable labor terms that they could possibly get.
And I think Tony Clark wants to get back to where the union was. And I think the owners, after what happened in the last CBA negotiation, feel like they smell blood. Like the union isn't, this is as weak as the union has been, and it's time for us to capitalize on it. And it is, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. But I think, or I hope, and I'm still optimistic, that the cooler heads will prevail and realize that, you know, the amount of money that you lose on both sides this season will be nothing compared to the long-term damage that you can do to the sport. That's what I'd be trying to sell on both sides right now.
And that's the truth. I mean, how can you have all the other sports come back, and if allowed, they will, and not have baseball come back and miss a full season when the country is so desperate for any kind of entertainment?
Because, Dave, you don't know what the future holds. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And what the players are looking at is, okay, I have this money that is guaranteed to me under my contract. So I can see that. I can, you know what I mean? I can count that money. I can taste that money. That's my money. As opposed to some of these guys who don't have, you know, whose deals will expire after the season, they don't know how they're going to be affected. Like, I don't know what my money's going to look like next year. I know what it looks like now. So I'm going to fight for the money that's guaranteed to me. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, what the owners decide to do. Are they going to tighten up the purse strings in free agency and hold us accountable that way? And what does that look like? Is Mookie Betts going to get a huge deal?
That looks like collusion to me.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that we talked about collusion in professional sports, is it?
But nope. Do you think you have a better chance of working out a fair deal if you don't play this season than if you do?
No, I think that either way, the owner's going to try to get
exactly
the best deal now and the best deal in the next CBA.
The one thing I will say, though, in all of this, you can't underestimate the greed of a billionaire. And if the Players Association is actually willing to use the nuclear option, then I think it makes it a lot different when you start talking about the CBA negotiations in 21. Now, the question is whether or not the players have solidarity and they're agreeing to hold out until that point. Like, would everybody be on board with taking it there? That's the thing that we don't know. With the NFL, I can tell you this. I've been in those rooms where the players are having those conversations amongst themselves in union meetings. And, you know, it sounds good initially, but when it gets down to the practicality of it all and the logistics and guys recognize that they're going to be missing checks for a significant period of time, there's a lot of guys that are hesitant to do that. And when you don't have all of the interests aligned, because in the players union, you're going to have haves and have nots, it makes it tougher for everybody to get on the same page. With the owners, they don't have that kind of problem.
Yeah. The only leverage you have now is a union is you have, or you control what the owners want, which is.
Yeah. The only leverage you have as a player is to withhold services.
Well, withhold services, but I mean, what you're fighting for, the only way you get to a deal that you feel comfortable with is to hold over the head of the owners that we have the ability to say yes or no to expanded playoffs. Right. And if you want expanded playoffs this year and next year, and that included in the next CBA, then, you know, let's come to something better than a 48-game schedule, because that for us doesn't work.
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, playing less than a third of the regular schedule of a season when you could probably play half or more is ridiculous. If that's the best you could do, that's the best you can do. But it's not.
It's not the
best. That's the best they're willing to do.
Yeah,
right. That's what they're willing to do.
That's different.
Oh, that is different. You're not wrong. But because they keep going back and forth and wasting time, is that you're going to end up in a situation with where you're at in the calendar that because you're afraid of the second wave and, you know, the most money you're going to make is on the playoffs and the World Series, that
right.
You're not going to be able to play 82 games, which is maybe what the owners are trying to do, is keep pushing this thing. So, I mean, there will be an abbreviated schedule that makes financially the most sense to them if they want the full prorated money.
Yeah. Yeah. But 48 games just, I mean.
Yeah, that doesn't feel right, Dave. I mean, David Cohn talked about it a little bit yesterday in the post. And he said that, you know, he thought 80 games was about right in terms of, you know, a truncated season and then going into the playoffs beyond that. Like, to me, 80 games is what the goal should be for both sides, and then making it work from there. I realize that the players are going to probably have to take a little bit of a haircut and not get the full prorated salaries for those 80 games. But to me, if that makes having baseball possible this year, then that's probably what they should go ahead and do, because the alternative in not having games is going to be detrimental to both sides.
Do you realize as you take a sit? I mean, as I'm sitting here listening to Chris talk and you talk, Dave, I mean, how diabolical the owners actually are. I mean, when this conversation first started about Major League Baseball or the NHL or NBA coming back, what was the biggest concern for all these leagues? It was the health and safety
the
of their players,
health,
right?
The health,
of course. Yeah,
health.
Between COVID and you know, ramping it up, it could be, you know, guy hurts his arm, whatever it is, like just potential injuries and everything else. So now we're at a point where, because the players union is so hell-bent on getting the full prorated salary, they're now willing to jam as many games as possible into a short period of time to try to get as much money as possible, putting their safety at risk. It's amazing what it's amazing what the owners do.
It's amazing what they did, but the players let them do it, Rick. I mean, I was talking to Bill Daughtry yesterday. He says hi, by the way, to both of you guys.
I love
Bill. But I was talking to him yesterday, and he said, why did the players come out and say anything? They shouldn't have said anything, and they shouldn't have issued a counter proposal or a completely different proposal. They should have let the owners send over whatever they wanted to send, and if they weren't satisfied with the terms, then reject the proposal and not say anything else. There shouldn't have been anything else coming from Tony Clark or the MLBPA. They shouldn't have said anything, because if you don't say anything, then the public doesn't know what's keeping baseball from coming back. The public can probably assume that it's COVID-19, and you can speculate that it could be money, but it's better to be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. The players shouldn't have said anything.
But they took the bait.
They
exactly
took the bait.
We always take the bait. We always take the bait.
But they didn't have to. They didn't have to.
They can't help themselves, though.
That we can't help ourselves. What Tony Clark should have done, exactly how I handle telemarketers. I change my voice and pretend like Rick. Rick is not home, but just please tell me what this call is about so I can make the decision if I want to listen.
Sorry, Rick's not here.
Tony's not here, but you can leave a detailed message when I'll get back to you. I'll tell him.
You want to know what people are saying, how you can eliminate the chipmunk from your yard?
I need something. Yeah, at this point, I need something.
I'm told by many on Twitter, and I don't know. This is not me. So if you use it and it doesn't work, I don't want to hear it, that I led you down this path. I'm merely telling you what people are saying. Antifreeze, they say. Antifreeze.
Just straight up antifreeze.
I don't know. I mean, you might want to do a little more research on it.
Yeah, but how does the antifreeze affect my plants? That's the issue. I'm not going to douse my carrots with antifreeze. I'm like, hey, kids, guess what's for dinner?
Well, obviously, you're not going to put the antifreeze on the carrot.
Well, I'd have to put it around. I mean, where? I'm going to put it around.
Yeah, maybe you put it around the garden, like on the outside of the garden.
Yeah, see, I don't know about that, because now all of a sudden the antifreeze, you know, penetrates the garden and I feed my kids.
Yeah, I understand.
Milo ends up growing extra things that he does. You know what I mean? That's not what I'm looking to do here.
I don't know if the antifreeze is the solution that you're looking for, bro.
No, I'm going to find. Now, listen, this is hand-to-hand combat. This is me versus, this chipmunk has pushed me to the breaking point.
I don't know if that's going to get it done either, but all right.
I don't think this is going to end well for you.
I don't think so either, but I'm willing to risk it. You got to risk it for the biscuit.
All right.
I'm going straight Bruce Arians in this one.
Yeah, but I think you're only looking at how it can end well for you. I don't think you're thinking about how badly it can get for you.
Risk it for the biscuit actually is the chipmunk's mentality.
It's a very healthy chipmunk.
Great point, Sandy.
Really into the carrots.
Of course. You probably can see for miles with all the carrots he's consuming. I would think.
I'm seeing an owl. If I for some reason decide to purchase an owl, the owl will take care of the or attract an owl somehow. Well, that apparently will take care
of
the
issue. Here's another tweet coming. The issue. Bucket of water, layer the top with sunflower seeds. Chipmunk jumps in thinking it's just seeds and drowns. Used to do it all the time at the old house I lived at.
Very dark.
I feel like the chipmunk is smarter than that.
Very dark.
Right. Now, if it leads to the death of the chipmunk, are you okay with that, or does that cause issues with you?
I'm not at that point yet. Mm-hmm. I would like to peacefully take
the chipmunk. So you'd like to salvage the life of the chipmunk, relocate
the chipmunk.
Drive him miles away and then let him go.
This chipmunk is having a mojito in my pool right now. Put a few drops of antifreeze on bologna. No, I'm not going to. First of all, I'm not going to waste bologna. Second of all, I don't have antifreeze.
All sorts of dead animals in the back.
Exactly right.
A lot of people advocating chipmunk genocide.
There's going to be a pet cemetery in my backyard. I'm going to have there'll be animals that I wasn't even intending to injure.
That's right. You have birds are going to be down.
Bunnies.
Raccoons will be there. Bunnies. The neighbor's dog is going to be lying in your backyard.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's all I would need, too, because we got stray cats. I don't even know where the cats are from, but that's all I would need.
I don't mind you taking them out.
Someone's outdoor cat. See, I like the outdoor cats, though, because they take care of the mice issues.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Underappreciated part of cats.
Mice sleeping on your bologna? Yeah, it'll be a problem. It'll be a problem. All right, you got a bucket list.
Sleep on my bologna.
Got a bucket list. All right, now imagine if you won $378 million Mega Millions jackpot. Taking a mega chance could mean making your wildest dreams a reality. After all, anything can happen in Jersey. Tweets are pouring in. I just had the same issue with the chipmunk.
I tried it.
Peppermint essential
I did it.
Oil mixed with water. That drove
I tried
right
it.
Away. Yeah, I didn't. Cayenne pepper, I'm being tweeted. It might be the answer.
Yeah, but what if this chipmunk's like spicy? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Maybe
I'm not
going to
judge
that.
I'm not going to stereotype the chipmunk. Maybe this chipmunk is into Cajun.
Maybe it is. Sounds like I was telling you right now. Before I went to antifreeze, though.
I'm going to try to take a picture. I'm going to try to catch him in the act so you can see this. There's something in his eye. I'm telling you, this chipmunk is, he's playing for keeps, man.
All right, we'll see how this
He's
works
out to embarrass
out.
Me. What he's doing is he's trying to embarrass me in front of my kids. Because my kids, Milo for some reason thinks I'm a superhero and I have like a secret superhero room.
He's a 5-year-old boy. Of course he thinks you're a superhero.
But he thinks I'm a legit superhero, like that I have a costume and I have a secret room that I'm hiding from him. So I notice him sometimes like pressing the walls trying to figure out if that's my secret
Stop
room.
Stop it. Come on.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Wait, Milo thinks there's secret rooms in your house that you are using to get ready with your superhero powers?
Exactly right.
The bookcase would be ruined. Is he pressing every ounce of the bookcase that he can?
Before the show, he was in where I'm doing the show, which I told you is like this was, I guess, the guy who lived here made it a library. And he's like staring at the bookcases. I'm like, so what are you doing?
He's going to find Scooby-Doo on the other side.
That's what he thinks he's doing.
Oh, my God. That's so good. All right, let's go. Here we go. Friday edition CMT.
Look at Santiago right with the music.
So good. He's ready. He's a pro.
Which, in fact, makes it a segment. All right, boys. So I'm actually, I hate to admit this because they keep stealing our guests, but you know how much I love Bart and Allen.
Yeah.
Love me some local meat. So we're looking for suggestions. And of course, I make none of my own decisions. Cassie does. And she saw the suggestion from the Bart and Han Twitter feed, which Anthony does. And he suggested music. Cassie loved it. So today on Friday, we are going with a music edition of CMT.
Music edition.
All right.
All right.
Very interesting.
So here we go. I'm going to start. There's going to be a lot of debate here. I'm telling you. Twitter will light up. I'm going to give you NSYNC, okay. The Backstreet Boys, and New Kids on the Block. Start with boy bands.
NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, New Kids on the Block. I got to be honest. The New Kids was the original, followed by Backstreet Boys, right?
Yeah.
And then you had Timberlake and
Timberlake NSYNC. Is NSYNC, yes?
NSYNC, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to marry NSYNC.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I think of all the talent between these three boy bands, Timberlake is the most talented.
Mm-hmm.
And really has kind of gone out on his own in many aspects of, you know, acting and all that, music to provide himself a successful solo career. So I'm going to marry NSYNC. And I'm not afraid to say it. I enjoyed moments of the Backstreet Boys. So I'm going to cuddle the Backstreet Boys.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I'm going to trash New Kids on the Block.
So disrespectful, Dave.
Side dance moves. I didn't appreciate
that. The New Kids on the Block? Come on, man. They set the stage for boy bands. Come on, man. You can't do that.
They were a pioneer of
I'm with Canty. You can't trash New Kids.
Take it away. Go.
All right. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to marry NSYNC. So I'll agree with you on that one. And your logic was sound.
Thank you.
Timberlake by far is the most talented of any of the members in the three groups. So marry NSYNC.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I'm going to cuddle up to New Kids on the Block, though, Dave.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
Because they did kind of lay the groundwork for the other two. And then, you know, by default, I'm going to trash the Backstreet Boys. Don't take it personally.
Now, that was like Kevin Richardson was Backstreet Boys, right?
Nobody Backstreet knows. Boys, yeah, and then you had Nick Carter.
Nick Carter, right?
So Nick was Nick
the
brother.
His brother's Aaron, right?
Aaron's the brother, yeah. Nick was in the band, yeah. I'm with Canty. I'm doing the exact same thing as Canty.
That's fine.
I can't trash New Kids. Can't do it.
No. Won't do it.
Donnie's got the Wahlburgers. He's got the TV show. He's married to Jenny McCarthy. I'd say he's doing pretty good.
He does. Is he on Blue Bloods as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, maybe I should have cuddled New Kids. But
it's a renaissance,
man. Maybe I should
have. All right, here
what's,
we go.
What's done is done.
I'm going to give you Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, and Katy Perry.
Spears, Aguilera, Perry. Chris, you want to start this one?
Yeah, I'm down to start this one. I am... Let's see here. I'm going to marry. I'm going to marry Britney Spears.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
And I know this seems a little bit strange, but Britney Spears, I mean, when she was at peak Britney, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find too many music artists that were at her level. So just by her sheer influence and the direction that she took that genre of music, I got to marry Britney. I am going to cuddle Christina Aguilera because, quite frankly, I was probably a bigger fan of her music than I am of Katy Perry. So that's how I look at it. And unfortunately, going to throw Katy Perry in the trash.
Look at this garbage.
See, I'm torn here because I agree with you that Britney Spears was probably the biggest star of all three.
Yes.
But I think you could argue that musically, she might have been the lesser of all three.
That is also
vocally,
true.
Vocally, yes. Vocally, yes, that's correct. Yes.
I mean, Christina Aguilera has a beautiful, sensational voice.
Amazing voice.
And then Katy Perry is still incredibly relevant, being that her music is still, you know, continues, and she's part of American Idol as well, which kind of.
And she wants to hear you roar. She wants to hear you roar. Yeah, and this is a tough decision because
I got to be honest, I don't know that you can go wrong in any selection you have here.
But also take into account, too, there is an element of crazy, too, you need to bake into this. How much crazy you willing to deal with.
Yeah, Britney's very crazy.
Extreme. I mean, she shaved her head at one point. Bald.
Yeah. And this is all part of it. This has got to go into the mix.
But here's the thing. Superstardom of all three, I think that goes to Britney. But there's no doubt that the biggest superstar of the three was Britney Spears. And for that, I will marry her.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Hi, guys. I'm in my gym right now. I haven't been in here for like 6 months because I burnt my gym down, unfortunately. I had two candles, and yeah, one thing led to another, and I burned it down.
You couldn't have played that for me before.
What do you mean one thing led to another?
You brought it up.
Have you ever said anything like that? I brought candles into a room, and one thing led to another, and the room is no longer standing? No!
You know, yada dee, yada do, Jim burnt down.
It's like the Seinfeld, right? Yada, yada, yada.
Jim burnt down.
What do you mean? What does that mean? One thing led to another.
Oh, my goodness. It's too good, Jim.
Right, her inner left eye.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't. All right, but I'm still, I mean, I'm already married to Brittany.
Let's go. Tighten this up. Come on. Would you please?
Hate the divorce, sir. All right, I'm going to. On talent, I'm gonna cuddle Christina Aguilera, and
Bombs
I don't feel comfortable about it.
Malicious seeds.
But I will trash. I'm not gonna say trash. I will just not select Katy Perry.
Look at this garbage!
Yeah, I disagree. I would cuddle Katy Perry. I would trash Christina. It's just me. All right, here we go. This is an interesting one. I'm gonna go with Mariah, Whitney, or Celine Dion.
Mariah, Whitney, or Celine Dion. All right, I'm going to marry Whitney.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Whitney was a superstar. Whitney was, I think, if not the most talented, right up there as far as the most talented.
Mm-hmm.
And she left us early, which made you want more from Whitney. So I will marry Whitney, and I think that might be the only answer. And now I'm torn, because in my mind, Celine Dion is clearly the better talent, but Mariah Carey might be the bigger superstar. But Celine Dion does play Vegas nonstop. I will cuddle Celine Dion, and I will trash
Bombs
Mariah Carey.
Wow, Dave Rockenberg, that is an interesting assessment in comparing Celine Dion and Mariah Carey. I don't know that any female vocalist has the range that Mariah has. But yeah, I'm going to marry Whitney.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Which I think is the only choice, right?
I think it's the only choice. Yeah. I mean, has anybody done the Star Spangled Banner before a sporting event better than Whitney?
No.
Carl Lewis,
yeah.
You guys are jerks. All right, so I'm marrying Whitney. I am going to cuddle Mariah because I think from a talent standpoint, her range, I mean, she doesn't always use it the best way, but no, Mariah was special. Really, really special. And I'm going to trash Celine Dion.
Look at this garbage.
All right, I would marry Whitney. I would cuddle Celine, and I would trash Mariah as well. I'm with you, Dave. How about this one? Biggie, Tupac, or Snoop?
Biggie, Tupac, or Snoop. This is not easy.
You want
this
me to go first, easy. Dave?
Yeah.
This is easy. I mean,
this is easy for you.
In terms of the culture and being influential.
Marrying for me is easy. But after that, it becomes difficult. But go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to marry Tupac. I am going to cuddle Biggie. I'm going to trash Snoop. And I hate to do that to Uncle Snoop, but that's just what it is.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing as well. Marry Tupac, cuddle Biggie, and trash Snoop. But it pains me because Snoop is a big football guy. And I have to take that into account with my decision. But I will agree with you. Tupac, Biggie, Snoop, that order. Final answer.
Yeah, here's where I disagree. I'm marrying Biggie. I love Biggie. Tupac, Snoop is not easy, but also I'm throwing into the mix that Snoop does have some sort of, I can't define the relationship. I'm just in my mind, I'm trying to picture it with Martha Stewart. You know, I have a crush on Martha Stewart, so I'm gonna cuddle Snoop.
Don't do it.
Really?
They were on the same,
Biggie?
Label at the same time.
No, and there was marrying Biggie.
And there was no question that Tupac was bigger than Snoop.
I can't help that. Listen, I can't help that Tupac doesn't have Martha Stewart. Snoop has Martha Stewart. You know,
if Tupac would have been alive, he might have had a show with Martha Stewart.
That's
who knows?
Right. That's a good point. I think he's got more than a show with Martha Stewart. That's what I'm hoping.
All right, here we go. Exactly.
Billy Joel, Bon Jovi, or Bruce Springsteen?
Billy Joel, Bon Jovi, or Bruce. All right. I'm going to marry Billy Joel.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry
him. I'm a Long Island guy. He's a legend. He's still playing the Garden, or was up until this, obviously, every month, and said he'll do it until he can't sell it out, and that's nowhere to be in sight. So for me, it's easy. I'm gonna marry Billy Joel, and then I'm gonna cuddle Bruce. I mean, Bruce has stood the test of time. He's legendary. So I will marry Billy Joel. I will cuddle Bruce.
Bombs and hellacious.
And I feel okay with saying it. I will trash.
Firmly garbage. Look at this garbage.
Well, boys, I got to admit this. This is a little outside of my lane. I don't particularly get into this genre of music. But in the interest of playing the game, I am going to marry Bruce Springsteen.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
Because he's local. He's from New Jersey, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I can feel good about that.
So is Bon Jovi, I believe.
Yeah, and I was gonna cuddle up to Bon Jovi because Bon Jovi has an arena football team.
Bombs and
if I'm not mistaken. In Philadelphia. So I am going to go that direction and I'm gonna trash Billy Joel.
Wow.
Firmly. And he does have a perfectly coiffed bouffant too, Bon Jovi.
It's ideal.
Perfectly coiffed. All right, here we go. I'm gonna end this on this one. I mean, I have a couple. I'm loaded with them, but I'm gonna end it with this one. I'm going to count on you guys to keep this thing tight because I got two I want to get to. So keep this tight.
All right.
We'll start with this one. I'm going to give you Jay-Z, Kanye, Eminem.
Jay-Z, Kanye, Eminem. Chris, go first. I'll do first the next time.
Oh, man. This is interesting. And I see what Rick did here because he's expecting me to go marry Jay-Z, but Jay-Z really didn't get to the height of his career until he had Kanye producing his records.
Ooh.
So I am going to, I know this is going to sound crazy, I am going to marry Kanye.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I am going to cuddle Jay-Z.
Bombs and
And I hate to do this because I think he was, and still might be, one of the best lyricists in the game. But I'm gonna trash Eminem. I just his music to me wasn't my speed. But in terms of being able to freestyle and battle, yeah, there was nobody better. But I still gotta trash him.
Trashing Rabbit. All right. This is not easy. You want me to go quickly? I will. But I'm not comfortable with this at all. I'm gonna marry Jay-Z.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I'm gonna cuddle Eminem.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I know it won't be popular, but I'm going to trash Kanye.
Firmly garbage. Look at this garbage.
These are all your own decisions. I mean, this is strictly your opinion, Dave. Yep. We don't always agree. All right, here we go. Last one.
Oh, can I say this? Can I make a little caveat on my last cinematic trash?
Yeah.
I'm talking about Kanye pre-Kardashian.
Okay, so not crazy Kanye.
Pre-Kardashian Kanye.
Okay.
I just want to make that distinction.
No, that's understandable.
Hats.
Hats. Here we go. Last one.
Yep.
I'm going to give you Prince, Michael Jackson, or Beyonce.
All right, I'll go and
keep this
and
professional too. Keep it professional.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna marry Michael Jackson.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
I mean, when you look at talent, unsurpassed, unmatched. I'm gonna cuddle Prince, and I like her, but she's not the same as the other two. I'll trash Beyonce.
Firmly. Look at this garbage. Look at this garbage.
The Beehive is I'm scared to do it with the Beehive. Oh my goodness!
I'm just telling you. I'm scared to do it with the Beehive. I'm with you, Dave. I think talent-wise, MJ is just on a whole nother level. Prince, even though I feel like it was his lane when he was at the height of his musical career was a little more niche, I still think in terms of his contribution to the culture, you got to cuddle up to him at the very least. And I am politely, respectfully walking away from Beyonce.
And on top of it, Prince could make you pancakes. I would just like the Beehive to know that was Dave Rothenberg and Chris Candy that trashed.
I didn't trash her.
It was respectful.
I politely, respectfully walked away.
It was a very respectful trashing of Beyonce.
I'm going to marry and cuddle Beyonce. How's that?
Wow.
And there you go, Prince. Boys. That is a Friday edition of CMT.
Beautiful. Oh, a terrific edition of CMT. NBA, I mean, we're back. Tim Bontemps from ESPN joins us to help us break it down. Tim, we appreciate a couple minutes on a Friday. So I'm understanding that the vote was 29-1, and the only team that voted against the proposal was Portland. What was, hopefully you know it, the rationale behind Portland of voting against the NBA's plan?
Guys, the Blazers were in favor of one of the other proposals that the NBA had discussed. You know, over the past few weeks, really four different things that emerged. One was just having 16 teams in the playoffs come back and play. One was to have all 30 teams come back and play. One was to have a play-in tournament for the final playoff spot, which is what the NBA chose. And the other one was to play kind of this group stage format where you'd have four groups of five teams. The teams with the two best records in each of them would then move on to the second round of the playoffs. And I think Portland's players, it sounded like from, you know, reading CJ McCollum and other people's posts on Twitter yesterday and also just kind of from general word around the league, I think they thought that their best chance to make a deep playoff run was to be in a setup like that. So they voted that way. But ultimately, everybody walked into that room knowing this thing was going to pass yesterday. So, you know, I get why Portland would vote in solidarity with their players if they wanted to do something different. But I think everybody knew this is what the final outcome was going to be.
So, Tim, we heard, I mean, obviously you mentioned the 16. We heard 20, and they settled on 22. What, I mean, at the end of the day, why did Adam Silver in the NBA choose the 22 teams?
Money. Money is why. Yeah. You know, the simplest way to do this would have been to just do the 16 games or 16 teams and just play the playoffs. But for the players don't get paid for playoff games. So, you know, the NBA, when the season ended, there were, I think, 259 regular season games still left to be played. If you just went straight to the playoffs, that would mean the players would have to give back a significant chunk of their salaries. And by playing, you know, each team is going to play eight games. You know, they're calling them seeding games, but they're going to count in the standings. By playing about 88 regular season games in Florida, the NBA is going to knock that number roughly down by a third, which, you know, gets the amount of money the players have to give back to a more manageable place. And it also helps the teams, you know, get to, you know, closer to where they need to get to with the local affiliates in their cable markets to, you know, they have contracted to show their games. So, you know, clearly the NBA was trying to come up with as many ways as they could to try to make back some of the money that the league is going to lose, you know, both now and going forward because of what's going on with the virus. And, you know, I think ultimately by keeping home all the teams that have nothing to play for, this was the best way to satisfy all parties here. Everybody gets to make some money out of it. It adds a few weeks, but not a lot longer to the season in terms of going to Orlando. And you don't have teams that are going down there and having to quarantine and be there for 4 or 6 weeks that have no point in being there. Every team has at least the opportunity to get in the playoffs and then play for a title.
Tim, yesterday we saw a little bit of a back and forth between Adam Silver and Rick Carlisle on how the NBA was going to handle higher risk individuals, specifically coaches. Do we have that resolved now?
Well, that was definitely interesting. You know, Adam Silver went on Inside the NBA last night, you know, they, as part of their special on, you know, race relations in America, and they were talking to him about coming back, the league coming back and voting yesterday, and he kind of just threw out there at one point that potentially older coaches might not be able to be on the bench, and they might have to be in the locker room or somewhere else. And that clearly was something that he had not discussed, or the coaches were not aware had been discussed. There was immediate pushback. There was immediate pushback from the Coach Association. Like you said, Rick Carlisle put out a statement. He's the head of the Coaches Association. But listen, this is something that we're going to have to watch over the next couple months. The league, you know, although yesterday was a good step forward for the league to be able to have the league come back, you know, start the process of the league coming back, there's a million things that still have to be sorted out, and this is one of them. I mean, you have a lot of coaches. You know, Greg Popovich is 71. Mike D'Antoni is 69. Alvin Gentry is 65. Rick Carlisle himself is 60. Terry Stotts is 62. I think there's eight or nine coaches that are at least 58 years old. And as we've seen, this virus is something that, you know, is more destructive on older men. So, you know, and that doesn't count assistant coaches. That doesn't account for trainers. You know, that's something, that's one of many things the league is going to have to come up with a firm answer to before they get down to Orlando and get this thing started. And that's just one of many. I mean, there's a lot of stuff still left to be negotiated.
Tim Bontemps with us here, ESPN NBA writer. So here's one, and maybe they've decided this, and maybe it's not decided yet. So let's just, for argument's sake, say Memphis winds up with the eight seed. But there are, I don't know, two or even three teams with the same record that are within four games of Memphis. How does that work?
You mean how is that going to work out?
Well, if they have the same record, let's just say New Orleans, Sacramento, and or two teams, whatever, have the same record. How is there like a little playoff between those? Is there a most wins? Is there a winning percentage to determine who winds up playing Memphis?
That is one of the questions that I am still trying to get an answer to, and one of the things I'm most curious about. There's two things that I really want to know. One is, what happens if teams tie for eight? Like you, or in your case, right, teams tie for ninth. How are you breaking those ties? And also, I want to know about the rosters, because last week I reported when the NBA did the GM survey and asked all 30 GMs what they thought they should do, virtually every GM thought there should be some sort of expansion of the roster. So are they going to allow players to sign with teams? Like, could, say, DeMarcus Cousins sign with someone? Are they going to allow for a couple extra guys on each team in order to you know, help account for any injuries or illnesses that take place during this thing? You know, those are a couple of things beyond the obvious, where we still don't know what the testing protocol is going to be and what the safety plans are for this. But that's like I was saying before, there's a ton of stuff. Like yesterday it was like, hey, the NBA's back, here's this big announcement. But like, there are a million details that they still haven't firmed up. And, you know, until we know what exactly all of that stuff looks like, we're going to have an incomplete picture of how this thing at Disney World is going to go.
Tim, there's been some talk, and again, I mean, depending on who you ask, no home court advantage because these games are going to be played in Orlando. Are they still thinking about trying to find ways to give the higher seed some sort of an advantage as we head into the postseason?
I doubt it. You know, my colleague Dave McGrenneman wrote that story the other day that some of these higher seeded teams are trying to come up with creative ways to allow themselves some kind of an advantage being in Orlando, but I don't anticipate that happening. You know, this is not going to be fair, really, in any way, right? Look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks. They were on pace to have the best record in the league. They're going to have home court advantage throughout the playoffs. They have a great home court in Milwaukee, brand new arena, and they're going to have to go live in Orlando for 3 months and play at a neutral site with no fans. You know, but that's just the way this is going to be. Like, to go back to your question before about why was this the format that was chosen, it essentially was the best of a series of bad options. And I think that, you know, as far as this goes with, well, what about these teams with better records? How are we going to reward them? I think it's just one of those things you're going to have to go, yeah, it sucks you don't get home court. It sucks you don't get some kind of advantage here, but this is not an advantageous situation for anyone. And so we're just going to have to play this out. I'd be pretty stunned if the league did something to change the rules of the game in order to give one of these teams an advantage because they're the higher seed.
Tim, I wanted to ask you about the other eight teams that won't be participating in the restart because it would seem like they're at a competitive disadvantage. You're talking about the league stopping play in March and not resuming the next regular season until December. You're talking about 9 months before these teams would be able to play competitive basketball together. I just feels like for already bad teams, you're putting them at an even greater disadvantage.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to be a problem spot, but the league is trying to come up with a solution for that. I believe there's going to be some kind of mini camps for those teams where they'll be able to have their players come in and work out. It won't exactly be the same as playing in games, but if they can come in and, you know, kind of go through the same testing protocol the teams are and then play, you know, scrimmage for a couple weeks and, like, get in, like, real practice time, it's obviously not ideal, but I think that the league is going to try to do that as kind of a way to bridge the gap. And also, like, I mean, you're right that the time off isn't great, but if the league schedule is going to be as truncated as it actually is or as it seems to be, and you're going to have teams coming back after, you know, maybe 6 weeks after the NBA Finals to start the next season, there could actually be some hidden benefit in, say, a team like the Warriors, right? They have all these injuries. They're not there. They might walk into next season, you know, with Steph and Clay and Draymond back and be fresh as daisies and actually be able to get off to a really hot start. So, for teams like the Knicks and these other teams that aren't going to make it, I do think they'll have a chance to get some workouts in and, in order to try to balance that. Because the league is cognizant of the fact that, you know, just like it's not fair for these top seeds that they're not going to have the advantage of being at home in a game seven, say. It's also not fair for these other teams that aren't going to be there that, to your point, have to spend 9 months in between games trying to have, you know, young rosters get better and be ready to get back on the court whenever they get the chance to.
Tim Bontemps with us here, ESPN NBA writer, 98.7 ESPN. So it feels like the NBA is a little hamstrung because I know they want to start next season later, and right now they're talking about December 1, but you can't really push it back that far because you have the potential, and that's all it is now, is the potential of the Olympics in July of 2021. So, I mean, it feels like they're kind of, you know, six on one hand, half a dozen on the other of what the right thing to do is here as far as starting next season.
I think it would be absolutely insane to impact your season because of the Olympics, personally. I don't think, as it stands right now, it's hard for me to see just looking ahead that the Olympics can actually be played or held. But even beyond that, if I'm the NBA, like, I'm focused on what's best for the NBA, not what's best for the Olympics. And, you know, I understand that there are some players who would want to go to the Olympics who might be playing in the playoffs in July and August if the season goes until, you know, say mid-August. But even if you just took players off non-playoff teams and went to the Olympics, you'd still have a really good team of American players, right? I mean, you could like, just look at what the team would be this year. You could have Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, Zion Williamson, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. Those are guys that are just coming off the top of my head that you could take from an American team and put things together. So, look, I think it's safe to say when you saw the immediate pushback to the December 1st date yesterday that whatever the start time of next season is going to be a contentious thing because the players' union is not going to want to have players coming back basically a month after this thing ends to start playing again. But I personally, if it was me, I would not be worried about trying to stop before the Olympics. I would be just saying, what is the best thing for my league? And then figuring things out from there. Because look, the NBA at the end of the day is not really partners with the Olympics. It's just something they kind of do. And I think they need to worry about what they're trying to do ahead of, you know, what may or may not happen in Tokyo next summer.
So Tim, depending on what happens, the suggestion was the season should start on Christmas Day. That's the NBA's day, right? You own that day.
Yeah.
Would this be something that sticks around long term? Like, if this ends up working out, season starts in late December and they have success, will this be the new NBA calendar, you think?
I think it's very possible. I'm also not sure what the plan is, right? Like, you know, I don't think they should stop before the Olympics, but, you know, if they do, if they are trying to rush, like, to me, when that came out yesterday, that the season was going to start on December 1st, at least hypothetically, my question was, why are they trying to do that, right? Like, what's the point? And it would seem the point would be to try to end it sooner. And whether that's to avoid the Olympics so you can have players go, or it's so you can go back to the old schedule the following season, I would think there'd be some reason to be trying to jam it in sooner when there's really no reason why you couldn't start, say, a month later, right? You couldn't start on Christmas if you didn't want to, so, or if you wanted to. So, yeah, I think it's definitely possible. There are people within the league who have been advocating for the league to shift to a December to August schedule for a long time. Steve Coonan of the Hawks, who's a long time he's the CEO of the Hawks now, but he's a longtime executive at Turner. He's been very loud about that. He gave a whole presentation about it at the Sloan Conference. You know, I certainly, I see the value in it. I mean, you know, I know in New York, obviously, you know, the Yankees and Mets are big business in the summer, but that's really it. And there's not much else going on. And if you can avoid having, you know, 2 months of your season go up against the NFL or 2.5 months of your season go up against the NFL, and instead have your playoffs go into the summer when there's really nothing going on, I think there's a lot of value in that. But yeah, that's, again, like, there's so many things that have to be set up about this season, and that's even before we get to what is the schedule going to look like next season? What is the salary cap going to look like next season, right? Like, if the salary cap drops because of revenue, you could see teams like the Nets having to trade players, the Celtics having to trade players, the Warriors having to trade players. I mean, you could have teams, like the Warriors could have an absolutely gigantic tax bill if the cap drops $10 or $15 million from where it's supposed to be. So, I mean, it's, again, like yesterday was a good first step. But for both this season and next season, I can't emphasize enough, there's just so many things left for the NBA to figure out before they get this stuff squared away and they can, you know, hopefully throw the ball up in Orlando on July 31st and start playing.
Tim, you're leading me right to what I wanted to talk about, because there's been a lot of conversation in Major League Baseball about the financial impact of this pandemic and that dictating how some small market teams do business and what they do in the player acquisition season of the sports calendar. And so I guess when looking at the NBA, is that as real a concern as it is in baseball? Because with baseball, it's a little bit of a different dynamic because they haven't played a regular season. I just wonder, is that as real in basketball when they've played the majority of their regular season and they will have some semblance of a postseason?
I think that I've always thought that figuring out this season for the NBA was going to be a lot simpler than figuring out next season for the NBA, for all the reasons you said and for all the problems baseball's having. Now, the difference is the relationship between the league and the players in basketball is as good as it's ever been. The relationship between the league and the players in baseball is about as bad as it's ever been. And that, I think that could be why, you know, baseball is partly why baseball is having so many problems right now. But no matter how good the relationship is, there's a lot of things that have to be sorted out from the financial side, and that's going to be messy and it's going to be difficult. And until that's officially done, it's going to be a real long slog, and both sides are going to have to dig in and do a lot of work to try to figure out the right way to balance things, not just for the teams, but also for the players and everybody else.
Tim Bontemps with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So I don't know if you've seen the Vegas odds, but the question goes beyond that. The Vegas odds were like 700-1 for Brooklyn to win the title. And all of a sudden they've dipped down to like 40-1 or 45-1. I guess with the presumption that maybe Kevin Durant returns for this postseason in Orlando. Do you think that's realistic that he could come back? And, you know, it's been a long time now since he suffered that injury.
I wouldn't rule it out, but my guess is that he won't play just based off of how things have gone. I mean, the Nets have said a bunch of times he's not going to play. I would expect he's not going to come back in a unique circumstance like this. But at the end of the day, it's all up to Kevin Durant. So, you know, everybody can say what they want, but if he goes up to the Nets and says, hey, I'm going to come back and play, they're probably going to say okay. So my guess is he won't play. Rich Kleiman, his agent, business partner, has said a bunch of times he's not going to play. But, you know, Kevin could ultimately decide he wants to, and then he will. So, you know, that's going to be something people are going to be paying attention to. I think there's a little question about that. I mean, certainly would be interesting if Kevin Durant showed up in the bubble and started playing. That would undoubtedly lead to some ratings.
All right, Tim, speaking of the bubble, last one for me, and you're not allowed to call it a bubble. It's a campus. Don't call it a bubble. As far as you know, I don't know if you can answer this or not. Will players, once they're in the bubble, in the campus, will they be allowed to leave, or are they stuck in there as soon as they test negative and are allowed in?
I mean, my guess is that there's not going to be very much freedom of movement, and you're going to be there, and you're going to be there for as long as your team is playing. You know, it's not going to be fun, but this, again, to go back to the fairness thing, this isn't really about fair or fun, right? This is about everybody finding a way to get this business moving forward. That's really what this is all about. You know, it's going to be a far different experience than anyone is used to. It's not going to be comfortable at times, and it's going to be awkward, and there's probably going to be some frustrations about it. But ultimately, it's about everyone's safety and trying to make this thing happen. And, you know, if that bubble is a firm place and you can't get in and out, that's going to be about the safest place you could possibly be, even if you're playing in all these contact games, right? So my guess is the NBA is going to be erring on the side of, we're going to really try to make sure that there's as little contact with the outside world as we can, so we can get everybody through this safely and healthily.
Get everyone through this safely and healthy, and be able to crown a champion and move on to next season.
All right. Well, Tim, listen, we appreciate you helping us break down the return of the NBA on July 31. Good stuff, and stay safe and stay healthy. We appreciate it.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, good stuff. That is Tim Bontemps from ESPN right here. He does a good job. Very nice. All right, so there we have it. But, you know, it's funny.
But see, that makes the most sense, though, Dave. I mean, that makes the most sense. I don't understand why.
You can't leave the area.
Yeah, because he's right. I mean, if in theory everyone does what they're supposed to do, I mean, there should be close to a 0% chance anyone gets COVID-19.
If you're locked away and you don't leave and they don't let people who haven't been tested in theory, you shouldn't have COVID enter the facility.
Makes perfect sense. But again, that's putting a lot of trust in your players. But I mean, you control.
You control
who comes in and who goes out.
You control all of it.
Here's the thing, though. Too, I actually heard a good point, and I didn't even think about it at the time. Is one of the role players? They didn't say which team. Said, of course I'm going to do what I'm told. I don't want to be that guy that gets our star player sick. Could you imagine being the guy, like if you were the, could you imagine being the guy on the Lakers that doesn't obey LeBron what he's supposed to do, goes out, comes, gets LeBron sick?
But you know,
I mean, you'd be like,
you would be able to go back to.
You saw how you got the reaction from Rudy Gobert from his Jazz teammates. And you're talking about somebody that's an all-star, defensive player of the year. You saw that reaction. So if you're a role player and you end up getting one of the star players sick, you know that's not going to end well for you.
Yeah, so if it means that you're scared to do the right thing, then so be it.
You'd have to sell your house. You couldn't go back. There's no way you couldn't go back that way. You'd have to.
You'd have to sell your house.
Here's the other thing, though, too. I also thought about this. Tell me if you guys agree with this, though. Knowing that next season could start, you know, a month, like training camp could be a month after your season ends, right? If you're one of the teams in the finals, how much more incentivized? I mean, you're already incentivized, but you think all of a sudden now someone like LeBron, knowing that, you know, next year's schedule, like he's not going to have much time for rest, that he realized like, the sense of urgency to win this championship now is going to be through the roof?
You would think so. I mean, you have a great chance to win it. There won't be any travel. You're in the prime of your career.
You're fully rested.
Fully rested. Your team's as healthy as they'll ever be. It's a golden opportunity to add another title.
Yeah, I think there's pressure on LeBron to win regardless, though. Like, there was pressure on LeBron to win coming into this season, and I guess maybe it ratchets up a little bit just because the degree of difficulty would be a lot higher for the 2020-2021 season. But, I mean, he's still got pressure on him to win. That hasn't changed.
He's LeBron James.
Yeah, and he's wearing a Lakers uniform.
You could almost say there's less pressure on, like, some of the teams, though. Like, if the Clippers don't win, is it really that big a deal? It's a bizarro season.
Yeah, if the Clippers don't win, it's not that big of a deal.
You can say that, but, I mean, I also would say that, I mean, how many times during the course of your career do you go into a playoffs where you're fully rested, or your team is fully healthy?
Never.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or rarely.
That's a good point.
So I mean, that's
fully,
why I mean,
they're going to be fully rested. You're going to be starting the postseason after not having played for months.
Eight games, and then let's go.
But eight games. Yeah. But here's the question. I mean, you got to figure they're going to baby like the Lakers and Bucks players. You're not even fighting for seeding. You already have it. Whatever the one seed is, you already have it locked away. So all you're going to do is just play the guys.
It's like preseason.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to play them so that they get into decent game shape, and that's it. You don't care about wins and losses.
Yeah, I'm not worried about how LeBron James is going to come back either. I'm not worried about if there was one team that I'm not worried about their conditioning or whether they'll be ready to go, it's the Lakers.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.